All right, welcome everybody to episode two, man. The season is in full swing, and this is Off the Bench, filling in for Q. And we're going to actually probably revamp the whole thing and get a new host, co-host for Q. We're going to be on here, you know, every once in a while as well, stepping in where we need to. And sometimes maybe we just want to get on here and just talk about basketball, which is a sport that we love. So tonight we're going to, on this show, actually, we're going to get into a couple of topics about the whole fiasco with Derrick Rose. Cal Korver being traded to Cleveland, Atlanta wanting to trade Millsaps, Wes Wilkins saying racially charged stuff, Rondo, Embiid, and maybe some Westbrook. And there's something I want to do where we kind of look back at some great players that played in the NBA that sometimes may get lost because the NBA is kind of like, we respect the history of the game, but, you know, sometimes we're focused on now. And I'm trying to figure out how, you know, I kind of wanted to do that. But just been listening to some podcasts and just thinking about how guys like Kenny Anderson, you know, were pretty good when they played and stuff like that. But joining me, of course, is B and FIFO. So if you guys are listening to this, please subscribe and share. So last week, or the episode one, you guys already heard that was from a while ago. We just wanted to go ahead and get that out now. A lot has changed since then. We're in full swing, and last night, while the national championship was going on, Twitter was lit. Apparently something happened with Derrick Rose. B, Ralph, what went on? I just saw that he was missing and nobody could get in contact with him.
I think they say what I read, and people will quote me if I'm wrong, but I saw that it was a family issue back in Chicago that he had to address or attend to or something. Is that right?
Yeah, he hasn't gone into specifics.
Right.
That's the most interesting thing about this entire storyline, because he said as soon as he got the phone call, he never felt that way. He had to drop everything he was doing and head back home. He didn't even want to take a phone call from the Knicks. So I don't know what can possibly happen where you don't even want to let your employer know,
right,
hey, I'm going to miss work because of a family issue.
Right.
Because when it's a family issue, I don't care who you work for, but especially if you work for a company or a franchise. paying you millions of dollars. They would like to know your whereabouts,
right,
just in case, just in case, because to them, you're worth $20-some million just this year. So I think it would be nice just to get a phone call, at least a text. Text the hey, I know you got Phil or somebody on, you know, you could text somebody. So I really don't know, and the particulars have been out of this story, but everybody's kind of giving them a pass. The Knicks find him, and he's going to start against the Philly, against the 76ers the next game.
You think it's a pass because he's hiding, hiding behind the family issue thing, not saying that is true or isn't true, but not saying that we need to know the details of it, but it is like, because when something happens, you can say, yes, yeah, a family matter and it's private, and then that'll be that because people like to respect the privacy. So do you think that people are just giving him a pass because of that? Because
of
they want to treat it with the seriousness that it probably deserves? Okay. Yeah.
Of course. And, you know, at the end of the day, if it's private, it's private. We don't need to question and find out the details of what's going on. But it's an extremely bad look for the organization when almost 20,000 people show up for a game that is supposed to include Derrick Rose, and you don't have an answer as to why he's not going to be participating in that game. That's just an extremely bad look. So that miscommunication between player and organization is bad. And that's the reason why I don't think he deserves a pass. Because even if it's the most private of private situations, you need to let your employer know. I think that's just part of being professional.
Yeah,
and especially
having common courtesy.
Just having common courtesy. They don't pay me nowhere near what they pay Derrick Rose. And guess what? If something happens to my immediate family, I'm calling my boss and letting him know I'm not going to be in today. You need to fill my shift. It's as simple as that. So I don't understand why Derrick Rose didn't have that level of communication with his employer. So did he, you know, and I don't want to question because of what he put out there so far.
He hasn't played in the fourth quarters in the last couple of games, and then he disappears. Melo got ejected last night, and overall, the Knicks are just a mess, man. Speculation could be that, you know, he was frustrated. He hasn't been playing. He's not happy. I don't think he's happy in New York, and that he just went MIA. Do you think that's possible? And do you guys think that Derrick Rose may want to be out of New York? They're not winning. They're not going to the playoffs.
Right. It's amazing how this story is playing out. Because you remember when Derrick Rose quoted that he felt that the Knicks are a super team? And like, you remember how people were just like, dude, you smoking? Like, what's wrong with you? And like, now we're seeing this being played out, and like, you questioning Ken, you know, he's already said that he's not happy, or, you know, it's like, do he want out of a so-called super team that picked you up during the offseason? I just think that's kind of amazing how the tables has turned now in these last 3 months.
You know, when I look at this situation, and I've been clamoring for him for a long time, Phil Jackson, mm-hmm. I think that when your organization is in disarray and you're trying to instill a culture, you need to be present for that culture. And I think that if he went to an organization that was already well ran and he was coming in there to make moves, you can be somewhat of a distant GM. But in New York, it's always been dysfunction. And even though I feel that Phil Jackson has done a good job playing or managing like a video game, right? Acquiring talent, moving bad contracts, doing this, doing that. Excellent job. But his presence not there on a consistent basis, his message not there on a consistent basis, I think that's what we're starting to see play out. Because there's certain things that he wants in triangle and this, that, or whatever. And we're getting Melo getting ejected in the third quarter. We're getting D. Rose not showing up for a game. You, as if I'm the owner and I see that D. Rose isn't here, the first person I'm calling is the GM. Hey, what's going on? Hey, mm-hmm. what's going on with this guy I'm paying $20 million to? How do you not know what's going on? You need to get on the phone, right? You need to figure it out. Like, that's all of that right there is the overall problem with New York. And I think it starts higher than Phil. It's always been Bob Dolan. It's always been Dolan. It's always been him. So until he does something different, and I think hiring Phil was the first step in giving Phil full autonomy, I don't know what New York does from here. The silver lining and everything for New York, they have Kristaps Porzingis, which is going to be a future superstar. So you have something that you can hang your hat on and you can build for the future, because the future is not going to be gloomy. But they need to figure out what they're doing now.
Hey, FIFO, do you think Nick should be willing to deal him before this trade deadline? Like,
yes.
Who's some names?
Everybody. Here's the thing. Uh-huh. I think you have to take somewhat the approach that Atlanta was almost willing to take when they were willing to trade Millsap. They have to blow that thing up. Everybody's available minus Porzingis, right? You have to get more draft picks. You have to draft more young guys. You have to get a coach and allow that coach to instill his culture and his system and all of that goes along with it. Yep. And let Phil just be the acquirer of talent, right? Yep. Like, don't try to impose the triangle offense or aspects of the triangle offense. Make sure that first and foremost, you get somebody that understands basketball and that can coach basketball and that has a vision as to what he can do with the talent that you're providing, right? Mm-hmm. That's the type of relationship I think Phil Jackson needs to morph into. for New York to work. And first and foremost, they got to get rid of everybody. You need to get rid of Melo and see how many draft picks you can get back and expiring contracts and bad contracts. Yep. And it doesn't matter because at this point, you almost got to go the Philly route, except that you know you have a guy that's going to be 2010 for the next 20 years. That's the difference. You know you have at least one guy like that. So I think they need to get into the draft. I think they need to get younger. I think they need to develop their own homegrown talent. And in a couple of years from now, they'll be in contention again. Because I think that in the NBA, you have contenders and you have purgatory. And then you have guys rebuilding. The purgatory guys are the guys that are in the playoffs every year but are not good enough to compete and not bad enough to get a high enough draft pick to change their franchise around. So at that point, you have to make wholesale change. The Knicks aren't even in the playoffs right now. Nope. Keep your first-round pick because it's going to be a lottery pick. Yep. Move Melo, get more picks, more future picks. Yep. That's where they are right now because it is not working.
Speaking of culture, let's move over to Cleveland. Everybody knows it. Kyle Korver got, and of course Atlanta, because we stay in Atlanta. You just mentioned Millsaps was on the trading block. Then they took him off. And you know, we're going to get into Wes Wilkins in just a second, but Kyle Korver to Cleveland. I think that's a great move. 52%
highway robbery. How
you think it's robbery?
How do you give the richest team in your conference just another piece of ammunition like that?
And you know he's going to get looks. You know he's going to get plenty of
wide
looks.
Open. Wide open looks. And he don't even got to run around like that no more.
Nope.
Chill in the corner, dog. I got you.
Yep.
I got you. Yep. So I don't know what Atlanta feels that they got back in the trade. I think that if Bud feels that they need to shake it up, I understand it. And Kyle Korver has not been the same player for the Hawks that he has been in the past.
Since Deldova hurt them knees.
Exactly. He hasn't been the same. He hasn't been the same.
But it has nothing to do with Deli. He had a kid, I think, 2 years ago. And he hasn't been the same. And I think they just had another kid. He hasn't been the same since. Let me tell you, man. Sleep is not speed. All right. There's somebody else that had a kid and he struggled in his first season, in that first year of that child's birth. So I think it's because he had a kid and that kid hasn't got to a point where he's
sleeping. Shumpert had a kid and look what happened. Look what that turned out to be.
Yeah, he's balling.
Shumpert, dog. Huh? He is balling. He is playing better.
You know what I'm saying? But he had it the same year they before they was going to the playoffs and they won. He helped win the championship, so he wasn't playing bad.
That's what I think it is. But go ahead.
But look, with Korver to the Cavs, this and you know what when it happened and I started tweeting it out, somebody had mentioned, oh, you know, yeah, that's a good move since JR's out. This has zero to do with J.R. Smith and 100% to do with Golden State. That's all it has to do with. Because just think about it now. You can potentially put J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, LeBron James, Kyrie, and K-Love. How do you help?
Yep.
If Golden State wants to go small ball, that go ahead and do it. They have a lineup that matches and rivals that lineup. Look, man, David Griffin, right? And I hope I'm saying his name correctly. The GM of the Cavs, he has pulled off some moves to fortify what they have going on. And you got to give him a lot of credit. What he pulled off last year, what he pulled off this year with his Kyle Korver move, and they're still looking to add an additional piece.
Point guard, yeah. Trying to get a point guard.
Either point guard or big man. That's what they're looking at right now. So look, man, Cleveland is the best team. And I think that they're doing everything in their power to ensure another championship this year.
Yeah, I'm thinking if they stay healthy and if Kyle Korver fits the way we assume that he's going to fit in, I'm going to say it right now, man, I might be screaming repeat for the Cavs, man. I might be screaming repeat. Like, if this works the way I think it can work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Cavs gonna be right back in it. Because like you said, Ken, when they played against Golden State and on Christmas Day, you already see LeBron, he don't fear them boys at all. And if they go into this finals against them healthy, all the ducks in a row, Cavs repeating this. They repeat.
And you know what? I don't want to speak in the past or the hypotheticals, but LeBron, this should have been a three-peat. LeBron should have been working on a three-peat right now, man.
Right. But you know, both of your best guys are down, so yeah, it was just no way. He was just outmatched. But yeah,
LeBron said they need a point guard. It's his last time saying they need a point guard. Who can they get? Who's available? And who would they trade?
Well, here's the thing, right? Like when you're a championship team like that, if you're going to make a trade, it's not going to be explosive. You don't have a lot of assets that other teams want, right? So they probably have some trade exceptions. So they could probably acquire somebody via trade exception, but they're probably not going to give up anybody off of their roster that means anything. Honestly, I don't know who. Let's throw some names out there.
Okay.
Let's throw some names. Who do you think would fit the whole Cleveland scenario right now? That's a backup point. I think somebody like Jared Jack.
He would be perfect.
I think they need somebody like a Jared Jack, somebody that's not going to take his foot off the gas when if he's thrusted into the lineup for unforeseen injury reasons or otherwise. I think he's definitely a good fit.
Where is Jared Jack? Who are he playing for now?
The last time I remember, I know he was playing with Brooklyn. He still might be there. Shelvin Mack of Utah. I think he could be another good fit.
Because they need somebody that's efficient, right? That's going to come in and
somebody that knows how to play point guard.
Yeah.
And continue to put pressure on the defense. I think somebody like a Devin Harris. Who else is out
there? I'm looking at the point guards now. I really don't see anybody out there.
Aaron Brooks?
A DJ Augustine?
He would be good. But he's in Detroit? No, Orlando.
He's in Orlando.
They're using him in Orlando because for whatever reason, Frank Vogel can't figure out how to get anything out of Elfrid Payton, so he's relying on DJ Augustine to run the show. But
remember, the head coach doesn't make the decision. So yeah, if Cleveland comes with two future first-round picks, Orlando might be like, hey, he's gone. J.J. Barea got championship moxie.
So it remains to be seen, man. David Griffin does a really good job of trades and acquisitions. If LeBron says he wants a point guard, they'll get somebody.
What about Ty Lawson?
If Sacramento is willing to blow that up, because right now,
but he doesn't make much money though. He doesn't get much playing time. He doesn't make much money, so that might be a trade. Because you know what, you could probably if they're going to start moving pieces, you could probably get in on being the third team and trying to get and siphon Ty Lawson from him. So
you could, but what's the guy, the coach? Because Collison's not working out. Collison hasn't figured out how to play in that system that Jaeger, that's his name, has over there in Sacramento. So he's using Ty Lawson a lot. He doesn't make the decisions, and if you're going to blow that thing up, then yeah, he'll probably be a piece that you get rid of because you didn't really invest a lot in him because of his situation with the DUIs and how everything went down in Houston. So they could probably get him. But, you know, we'll see. LeBron has let it be known, and the organization will listen. Why was Millsaps available? Is Atlanta just done? Are they just giving up, punting on the season? They won 7 straight now.
Yeah, it's not about giving up. It's about coming to the realization of what you are as an organization. Yeah. Like I said, the Hawks have been in purgatory for forever.
Yep.
ever since we got Joe Johnson.
And they're gonna be that, they're gonna be that way again. They're gonna get to the playoffs and first or second round exit. There you go.
Yep. And that's why I'm not happy that they didn't move Millsap, because it's time for the reset button. And I think they did a good job of jettisoning a couple of bad contracts. Joe Johnson being the first one. Yo, that was probably the worst contract ever, or one of the worst contracts ever. Letting Josh Smith walk, but we didn't trade him at the right time to get something in return for the future. We didn't have that foresight at the time. But I think we've done a lot of good in retooling the team. But all we did is put ourselves right back in the same situation with better contracts, with more favorable contracts. But at this point, we gotta blow it up. We because you're either going to get your superstar in free agent or you're gonna draft them. We haven't been able to attract a free agent. Think about it. Joe Johnson and Dwight Howard are the two biggest names that we've been able to attract. That's not good enough. That's not winning you a championship. So we got to be bad enough to be able to draft somebody good enough to turn our franchise around. And I think that's the point that we're in. And I think the beginning of that would have been letting go of Paul Millsap.
Well, he's staying, and he didn't want to go. He likes it here. So,
but he also is not committing to opting into his contract.
Oh, okay.
So
they gave Bazemore too much money, I think, at the time when they re-signed him or signed him or whatever.
What do you got, like 70, 80 mil, something like that?
Yeah. I think that was a little bit too much. Yeah, I mean, he didn't really do nothing that much to, like, really.
But now looking at the contracts, you know, it's kind of, it's okay.
Like, it's kind of like even keel or whatever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you though, but man, I think they should just go ahead and just start from scratch, man. Like, just.
But it's so hard though to actually get a team. I mean, you guys have been here, man. Like, we finally, even though it's that purgatory you're describing, we finally had a team that was able to win though.
But win what?
Win it though. I mean, I know, but at least we're not the joke of the NBA.
I understand that, but think about it. Atlanta has, like, okay, there was a couple of bad years, but look, once you hit the bottom, there's only one way you can go. There's only one way you can go. Is Philly the joke of the NBA now?
Nah, we're gonna talk about them in a few, but they're not.
But one out of their however many draft picks is truly the guy. And everybody is like, oh, well, look at what Philly's
doing. They make good decisions. Atlanta has proven that they can't make good decisions when it comes to draft picks.
Exactly. Well, they've proven that time after time after time.
But look, Danny Ferry was here. He had to get rid of contracts. So he really wasn't in the position to draft young talent and develop, right? Then we know what happened with him. Now Bud is here. Let Bud build this up. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was given something that can win, but was not a contender. We have to build a contender.
All right, we'll let Bud put together. I know this team is not going to win or beat anybody. I knew it when they won 60 games. They looked good. Everything just looked good statistically and on paper, but they didn't have that guy to compete. And at the end of the day, when you go up against superior talent, you're going to get mollywopped. Danny Ferry is gone, and Wes Wilkins got himself into hot water with comments. He basically said this, that he had a black wife and three mixed kids, so he's used to people being angry and argumentative. A season ticket holder, Clarenton Crawford, who is black, sent an email to the team president, Steve Koonin, on December 9th. There's been an internal investigation. Nzinga Shaw told the Undefeated that they heard multiple sides of the story, including getting multiple eyewitnesses of what took place. And they're saying that it wasn't actually like a direct quote, but he did say something that was off color. And he described his wife's race, and they're going to handle the discipline internally. When you guys heard about their comments, if you did, did you what did you make of it? Because I can tell you when I first heard it, I was like, I get where he was going, what he was trying to do, but I don't think, and definitely, because he's still got to go home, right?
Right.
So, right. You know, he's definitely not going to say anything racist. Obviously, he's married to a black woman, you know, so he's not racist. But he still has to go home, so I don't think he would say anything that would jeopardize that. And I think he was just making a joke that came off yep. poorly.
Yep.
And I don't think it was anything for me. I wasn't even upset.
Yeah.
It was like,
I wasn't. It didn't rub me the wrong way or anything like that. I think the setting of him saying it, and maybe the way he said it. I mean, I didn't technically hear him say it. I'm just going by when I read the article and read the comments. But I just think the setting of him saying it in that matter, I think could have been, I don't know, I guess he could have had a different approach. Or maybe worded different. Or I don't know. I just think, you know, in the sensitive world that we're in, you know, let's not forget, we're in this sensitive social media world. You know, I think that had a lot to do with why it got magnified just the way it is. Because like you said, Kyle, I agree with you. Like, when I heard it, I wasn't like, oh, man, heck no. Like, X him out, like, whatever. He needs to be fired right away. He's racist, da 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 da. Because like you said, Ken, he got to go home to that. Look, Ken, not only he has to go home to that, but you got to think about her side of the family. You know what
Ooh,
I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm 100% sure he didn't mean that with no racial tension or to stir up anything and talk down upon the race that he's married to, you know, that the family that he's in. That would be stupid for him to do that. So, yeah, man, I did not take that. I was just like, when I saw it was making a headline and when I actually read what he said, I'm like, oh, here we go. Sensitive social media world we in, society that we're in. So, you know.
Man, Rondo's been benched. FIFO, you said on Dead in Sports, system, coach's decision, et cetera, et cetera. I was looking at this team a while back before we even took over the show for the time being, and I was just wondering, do Rondo even fit? And is because when first of all, was it something that he did to cause the benching, or was it really just a coach's decision on what's best for the team? And two, is he a good fit for a team like that? Because Jimmy Butler is that dude.
First thing, they signed Rondo before they signed D-Wade, right? So I don't think that they knew the type of team that they were going to have once they signed Rondo. I don't think they thought they even had an opportunity for D-Wade. Rondo has to go to a situation that the coach understands that Rondo's going to pretty much do what he wants on offense because he's that type of point guard. Now, you got the NBA running a lot of different type of systems, primarily space and pace, which is what Fred Hoiberg is based on, which is the reason why he primarily got the job in Chicago, because he was going to change them from this defensive juggernaut to this offensively efficient powerhouse. And Rondo doesn't fit that style of play. Mm-hmm. D-Wade doesn't fit that style of play. And Jimmy could be a piece of that style of play. But with all those three guys together, it's kind of like, huh? Like, what was the plan? Like, if that was your plan with Hoiberg, but then you give him this, then how do you expect for this marriage to work out, right? And there's going to be casualties in that. Rondo's one of those people. It's the same thing that I said that was happening with the Lakers when they hired D'Antoni but wanted to keep Dwight Howard and Paul Gasol. That doesn't work. It's not a D'Antoni type of team. They're going to struggle. He cannot coach that personnel. I think that's kind of sort of what you're seeing happening in Chicago right now. Rondo does not fit, and he's going to be the odd man out because Jimmy and D-Wade are still too dynamic. What Rondo needs is a squad that needs him to create shots. Jimmy and D-Wade do not need anybody to create their own shots. Have we not seen Jimmy this season go up and score 50, then back it up with a 47-point game, hitting at the end of buzzer game-winning shots and all of this type of stuff. He doesn't need anybody to get him the ball. So Rondo is out of place. I don't think – I don't know. From everything that I've seen, it wasn't like Rondo missed a team flight or a practice or something like that, and that was the reason for the benching. Fred Hoiberg stands behind him saying – it was simply a coach's decision. He does not. He has not been playing well. And in that five-game stretch, they went 3-2, so they're better than 500. I don't know if that's a proven, you know, record saying that, hey, we're better without Rondo. But if that's how the coach feels, I can't second guess.
Man, is this Rondo? Is Rondo's time passing? Because if you look at this,
he's a backup point guard.
Yeah, if you look at this now, from 2013, he was at Boston. 2014, he was with Dallas for only 46 games. Came back to Boston, only 22 games. Got traded to Sacramento. We know how that went. Now, this situation in Chicago, like FIFO said, I think his time has passed as a every game starting point guard. You know, he's definitely at this point of his career where you got to look at him as your backup. You got to look at him as your 22, 23 minute, you know, a game type of guy, backup point guard. I think his time as a official starting PG is over.
You're 100% right. You know what Rondo's biggest problem is as a basketball player?
He never developed a shot.
He can't shoot. And we saw this a little bit with Jason Kidd. By the end of his career, he's number five all time in 3 points made.
Right, right. We're talking about Jason Kidd.
Jason Kidd.
Right.
Like fifth all time. Like that is nuts, right? And I'm not saying that's the level where Rondo needs to get to. But as you get older, you can't move as quick. Trust me,
right.
I'm getting to my mid-30s and my mind is way quicker than my body. You have to be able to shoot. Because I'm telling you, as an older basketball player now, the only reason why I can still hoop is because I can shoot, man.
Look at Big Shot Bob. Even though he still kind of had a jumper in his Houston days, but when he was athletic and, you know, and everything, jumping out the gym, dunking, when he got in them San Antonio years and stuff where
dude he was just
little, he was a little chunky in the midsection. Mm-hmm. Dude, he was still – hey, he was still filling them three-pointers up, though. You know, like, you're gonna have to develop that jump shot, man.
And in this NBA, right, like, we're seeing the evolution of basketball because we're seeing what position is the most dominant position in basketball right now is the point guard. And the point guard has evolved. It's no longer, okay, let me get over here. Let me throw this pass. Let me set a pick. Let me make sure everybody's involved. These point guards are coming out here getting buckets. They're getting major buckets. Steph Curry is getting major buckets. Dame is getting major buckets. Russ is getting major buckets. Yep. Even Kyle Lowry get major buckets. Yep. Like, these guys out here getting buckets. And if you cannot get buckets or slow them down from getting buckets, you're a backup point guard. And Rondo needs to be able to space the floor consistently in this NBA if he wants to continue to collect checks. Because if he cannot do that, if he cannot add that skill set, he is not going to be in the NBA. And it's a shame because he is a savant when it comes to passing and setting up his teammates. And he would be the ultimate backup point guard if he could just shoot a little bit.
The Warriors blew a 24-point lead to Memphis. Everybody's covered and talked about that game. But there was something that I saw that I wanted to talk about. And it could just be a moment in that game, but it stood out to me, man. And that was that last possession by Kevin Durant when Curry, who was on, wanted the ball, and Kevin Durant wanted the ball, and Curry reluctantly threw him the ball and kind of stomped off. To me, that was a sign of probably two guys starting to kind of jouts for position. That's what I saw. People have been talking about Curry. Curry has had a down year, as they say. He hasn't looked the same. It's been Durant's team. I think that it's a better team when Curry's the guy. Do you guys agree with that? And did you guys see the exchange? And do you think is that they that is nothing and it was just that game? Or is there something else going on within that team that we don't know about? Because Durant cussed, no, Green cussed Durant out after he missed that shot.
Right, right.
He was Durant mad. Don't like being cussed out.
Hey, but that's what you signed up for on this squad.
Yep. There you go. That's what you signed up for, man. Like you know Draymond Green is an emotional dude. Like you know he's like a no nonsense, kind of like old school Movado type of guy. You know what I'm saying? So, like FIFO said, Durant signed up for that. What I was telling Ken I think earlier is, you know, with that Memphis game, and I always felt this about Memphis. I really think just from a roster standpoint and the way that they play, they have the perfect ingredients to beat the Warriors, but I just don't think they can do this consistently in a 7-game series. You know, I think if they was to play the Warriors, you know, at first I'd be like, oh, man, Warriors in trouble. But Memphis, if Memphis can play like they played against, because you saw what happened. Zebo, Marc Gasol, and Conley was killing them. Because, you know, Zaza wasn't, he was a non-factor. Like, non-factor. And JaVale McGee didn't have no answers defensively for Marc Gasol. But I just don't think, Memphis can play consistently enough to beat them in 4 times in a 7-game series. That's my only issue with Memphis. But I think just from top to bottom and the way they grit and play, they have a possibility of knocking out Golden State, but I just don't think it'll happen. You know what I'm saying?
I think there's a rift brewing. I saw Curry toss Durant the ball.
And like walked off.
Do you think, Ralph? It was like, fine, take it.
When people say that it takes time to gel and there's certain things that people – These are the moments. This is part of the process. Like, this is the reason why you're going to see Draymond talk to KD kind of in a harsh way, but it's not really harsh. It's just basketball. Like, when I saw that exchange between them two, if you're a leader on a team, you have to have that conversation with whoever. Yep. Even if you're not the best basketball player, but if you're a leader on that squad, sometimes you have to have that conversation with that best basketball player. What you saw, Ken, is not a rift. It's a learning and understanding. Because Steph understands KD is arguably the second best player on the planet, right? Just in pure basketball. And obviously, I'm top five. I want the ball right now. And he has been passive a little bit to make sure KD is acclimated.
He wasn't trying to be passive. But
we're starting to see that Steph is like, okay, homie, you done had your opportunities now. now you know I am the unanimous MVP now, right? You know I got two of them things and you got one of them things. So I'm gonna give you this one, but the next one you ain't gonna get. And that's all that we're seeing. Because look, man, we're just now starting to see LeBron and Kyrie get on the same page. They've been in the same book. They've been on the same chapter. But these boys are on the same page just now. So it's going to take Steph and KD that I don't want to say the same amount of time, but it's going to take them time. We don't know what type of time. We don't know 100% if there isn't a rift, too, Ken, to your point. But I think because it is working, because they are winning, that this is just part of the process of them becoming great and understanding when it's your time versus when it's my time. That right there is going to take the longest. And I agree with you. I think they're a better squad when Steph is on and the ball goes through Steph. Because having KD as a second option and Klay as a third option, you can't guard that. So, and the way KD needs to score is solely one-on-one. Down the stretch with Steph, you can put him into your offense because he's the ultimate breaker of any type of routine that you're trying to do because the man got 40-foot range. So put him into a set and just play off of him. And KD will get a shot, and if not, it will be Klay. So I think that they're just forcing the issue, but eventually it'll be massaged out. And if it's not this season, hopefully he resigns and it'll be next season. Because it will take time, Ken. That's all you're seeing. It's not a riff.
All right.
Not yet.
That was my first time seeing Curry react that way, because he's always used to having the ball in his hand as the primary guy when they needed a play, and Durant wanted the ball and Curry wanted the ball too. So they'll figure it out. I just know that I remember in Miami, Dwayne Wade came out and said, this is LeBron's team, and they took off. And at some point, they're going to have to make that decision. I think Kevin Durant is perfect as a B guy. We saw that in Oklahoma. That's why he went to Golden State, so he can fit within an offensive system and don't have to do play one-on-one as much, and that he can get easier shots. And so far, it's worked. There's just some other things they got to work out, but we'll see. Sixers. Embiid said he thinks they can make the playoffs.
Not this year.
What y'all think? Eight games out.
No, but you know what? Look, I don't blame Embiid for saying that. I love it too. Because look, when you're trying to instill a culture change, which the 76ers culture change, the process and all of that, it started what? Like we're like 5 years into it now. Mm-hmm. 3 to 5 years into it. So for the first guy that they drafted to come out and say that, he has to say that. If he wasn't saying that, I'm like, you know what? He's not the franchise. He's not the process. He's not what you need to build a championship contender if he's not saying that right now. Because remember, before the season started, on the practice squad, when they were getting ready for preseason and all of that, he said, I am the best player on the court. That was including Ben Simmons. He said that. You could go back and, I know I mentioned it on Dead End Sports. He said that he felt he was the best basketball player on the court, Joel Embiid. For him to say that now, he has to say that, because that is part of being that leader, being that franchise guy that's going to turn it around. He has to say that. Now, me being a pundit on the outside and trying to be as objectionable as possible, look, man, they don't have the roster yet to make the playoffs. He's extremely transcendent, and he can almost get you there by himself right now. That's how great he is. But he's not ready for that task. He's just not ready for that by himself. With Ben Simmons, if Ben would have been playing the entire year, I would have said yes. But with Ben Simmons just now playing 5-on-5 basketball in practice, with him probably coming back in the next week or two, I don't think it's enough time for them to really make a playoff push. But I'm going to tell you like this. Next year and every year after, barring injury, Philly is legit. Legit. They still got to make some moves. And you know what? And I'll reserve to change my opinion based off of what moves they make. Because they still got to trade Nerlens. I don't know what they're going to get back for that.
They got to get rid of Okafor.
Huh?
Okafor is probably out.
That was my next point. If I throw my GM hat on, I'm getting rid of both of those bigs. I got Darvin Sarich. I'm getting rid of Okafor and Nerlens. I need something in return. I need guard play. I need picks. This next draft is super loaded with point guards. I need one or two of them.
I think Ben's your point guard.
Look. Look, you still need a guy on the roster labeled as point guard. My thing is this. I think Ben can play point guard, but the way the NBA is right now, I still think he's better as a wing guy and having him play with a score first point guard. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of score first point guards in this draft.
I do think he needs to play with a scoring mentality point guard. But I think I think he should be the guy that pushes up and make those amazing passes.
Of course. But look. LeBron is on pace to finish top 5 assists, right? And that's going to be by far the highest of any non-point guard. I think Ben can do the same exact thing. And I don't think he has to be point guard to do it.
B, why don't Westbrook go to the hole, man, when the game's on the line, man? Why is he always jacking up threes? What's up with that? What's up with Westbrook's late-game decisions, man?
Man, That's always been my issue with Westbrook, as in, you know, when we always list him point guards, and I always put CP3 over him and everything, because I'd be like, man, sometimes that point guard IQ, sometimes I just don't know what the heck Westbrook be thinking sometimes in his decision making as the point guard and the leader of the team, man. I don't know. And not just Westbrook, it's a lot of guys, like, just always just stepping back, chucking up threes. Even moments when you don't even need a three. It's like, why are you chucking up these shots, these three-point shots like this, man? Contestant three-point shots. It's not like they just wide-open shots. Now, granted, Westbrook is good enough to create space and get these shots off himself. But, yeah, I don't know why he – I don't know what's up with that, Ken. I don't know why not just Westbrook, but a lot of these guys are chucking up threes just as like a safe haven or something, man. I don't know. I don't know what's up. I understand if you got the confidence. That's okay, but in certain game situations when you don't need it, why shoot it?
We dog LeBron for not attacking the basket as much, because we all, just like Westbrook, he could just get there with ease.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? Because Ralph, he's had a couple of chances to a couple of opportunities to win games late, and he's been jacking up poor shots.
To me, this is where I would always challenge Russell Westbrook. Because, you know, look, this is why I love having a show, creating a platform, because now I have things documented. I have said for the longest, if I'm an NBA coach, give me Westbrook almost over everybody. Because I want a guy that I have to try to tone down versus I have to turn up. But there's challenges with that type of player, right? Because he has all of the bravado, all of the confidence, yep, to take a contested three and truly believe that he's going to make that. I know when he's shooting it, he's believing he's going to make it. But yeah. I would challenge him as a point guard to get a better shot for yourself and or your teammate. Because coming up, I had to do the same thing, because at first I was a scoring point guard and I learned to be a pass first point guard as I got older. And I think that we've seen massive strides in the point guard IQ. I think the last thing for Russell to master is end of game situations, toning it down, getting a better shot. You know what I'm saying? Because at the end of the day, what else can we really get on him to improve? He has improved in every aspect except that. And I think that has to, because of the type of player he is, I think that has to come directly from the head coach. And yeah, when he has a bad play and we had to foul, you need to be talking to me and I'm going to give you a piece of my mind as to what you need to do on this next play or the next game when we get back into a scenario like this. So that way, this right here, what you just did, does not happen again. Because guess what? You're going to be just like D-Rose sitting right next to me in that fourth quarter. And obviously, that's not going to happen. I'm just talking smack. But those are the type of things that I would have to tell him to get my point across. So that way, he knows that's not acceptable running our team. Because at the NBA level, it's not just the head coach. When I'm coaching kids, I can say my team. Russell Westbrook, that is his team. So this is our team. But we have to get in a better position down the stretch. And we're relying on you to do that. These shots are ill-advised. You cannot take these shots anymore. And to me, it's simple. It's simple. I don't know why he hasn't been able to get over it.
That's it, man. Hey, make sure you guys subscribe to the podcast. Share it. And, you know, I don't know, man. They you know, Q might not get his spot back. This is kind of fun. It's kind of fun. A basketball-only show, man. I have so many questions and little things that I pick out throughout the week, man, to just want to sit down and just talk.
And we're hot and heavy in the middle of the season, too. Like,
yeah, man. And there's always kind of these little things that's happening that the mainstream media don't even talk about. And I'm like, y'all tripping. But
hold on before you close out, Ken. the next time we do this show, we got to talk about Jabari Parker.
Okay. Yes.
Got to talk about Jabari Parker.
Yeah, we do. I'll make a note. Yeah, we do. We definitely got to.
Man. All right, guys. That's going to do it for us, man. I think they say you've been played or something like that. I don't know. But that's it.
Peace.